Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. Welcome in on this Thursday to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. September is 24 days old. Thursday Night Football is back tonight. The Dolphins and the Jaguars. How many more nights of Fitzmagic are going to be sprinkled out onto the field before we see Tua Tagovailoa? We might start to get our answer this evening as the Dolphins and the Jags, with Jacksonville installed as a 3-point home favorite, play tonight. Danny, how are you?
Good, my friend. Good basketball match last night, too, in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Miami Heat are a pain in the butt to play against. Boston did everything they could. Your guy. When Grant Paulson, basketball scout, speaks, everybody should stop and listen. He doesn't speak often, but when he speaks, he brings you such hits as Jason Tatum over Markelle Fultz. When he speaks, he brings you such things as Rookie of the Year, John Morant. Tatum, scoreless in the first half, electric in the second. Great ball game going down the stretch. But the story, of course, is Tyler Hero, a guy that the Wizards did not draft, by the way, who scored 37 points in the ball game last night, was on the all-rookie team. Let me know when Rui's doing that in a conference final, but I digress. Tyler Hero was amazing last night, making shots from the parking lot. He was awesome. He's why the Miami Heat are up 3-1 as of last night. What a great basketball game. And you're right, some more foosball tonight. Even though it's fanless, it's getting delivered to me, and I like it. I like that, so I get the deliveries on my television.
Couple things on that Eastern Conference final game last night as Miami took the 3-1 series lead. First on Tyler Hero. I mean, he was such a great shooter and a great player in college, but he wasn't the player that I saw last night in college. That wasn't really his role, which happens a lot on those loaded teams.
On those Kentucky teams, yeah.
Yeah, constantly. But 37 points. I read that only Magic Johnson has ever scored more points than that in a playoff game at 20 or younger. What an amazing accomplishment for that kid.
He's buckets. And apparently I saw this from the guy that used to cover hoops here in D.C. is now in Indiana, who covers the Pacers. But Jay Michael shared on his Twitter account that apparently a Wizards scout went to a workout of his and was blown away, and it just wasn't what they were necessarily looking for. They didn't like that his arms were kind of short and something about some of the physicality things. He didn't check some of the right boxes. In this era of positionless basketball, you know, a guy that could shoot it like that and create his own as a teenager, pretty good commodity just from my perspective. But that guy, he comes off the bench in Miami for a really good team and dropped 37 last night. I mean, that's why they won. They play great defense. They're a pain in the butt, as I said. They come at you in waves, and Boston has had a really hard time with Miami's zone when they go to it, and they're not really sure when to go small, when they're not to, and Spoelstra just keeps running different lineups and different looks and great things off it. He's an outstanding coach, but that was really about Tyler Hero's shot-making last night. He was incredible.
I just can't believe the Heat are 10-2 in these playoffs. I mean, it seems like every single game they're the underdog, and they win almost completely throughout the playoffs. 2-A game every single time they've played of the 12 games. It's pretty amazing. The other thing was Jimmy Butler, who's awesome. 24 points, 9 boards, 3 assists. Correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I am. Did Philly decide they didn't want him, or did he want to leave there?
I think it was a little bit of all of that, right?
Because the way that I see this is that basically the 76ers decided Jimmy Butler's not the kind of guy that we can go win a championship with. And boy, is he making them look stupid if that was really their evaluation.
Yeah, so they you know, it was one part salary cap, I think one part fit, and they were like, well, there are too many, what's the expression? Is it too many cooks or not enough chefs?
Too many bananas. But
if you have a number of ingredients and too many wait staff and a maitre d', but a hostess that's not there with the chefs and the cooks.
There were too many hostesses.
Yeah, too many hostess
at the front
cupcakes.
Table.
Yeah, too many snowballs or ho-hos. Yeah, but the point is, they had too many mouths to feed. With when you count in Embiid and Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris, and then you add Jimmy Butler to that, it was almost overkill for them. So they said, this won't be as big a loss. I think they ended up choosing the wrong guy, personally. He is a tough, ornery son of a gun who's probably a pain to play with at times, but I don't care about that. That guy makes winning basketball plays all the time. He's a really good player.
Meanwhile, the Nationals' winning streak snapped last night. They had been rolling. They'd been beating the Phillies every time they played them, and they needed to keep winning to keep their playoff hopes alive. The Nats last night drop a 12-3 game to Philadelphia, and this was actually pretty competitive until the Phillies busted it open with some runs in the eighth and then scored six more in the ninth, and before you know it, the Nats had Brock Holt on the mound throwing Ephus breaking balls as he got an out and gave up a hit to put the game away. In the end, Eric Fetty was actually pretty good. Now, Austin Voth threw his seven-inning outing one day earlier. Fetty goes seven innings, three runs to try to give himself a chance to be in the rotational mix next year. The most important thing that I saw was Juan Soto's 69th career home run last night as he went to the opposite field. I have to look these numbers up because I haven't updated them over the last couple of weeks. But as of about 15 to 20 days ago, he was leading Major League Baseball in opposite field home runs since the start of last year. It was like him, Christian Yelich, and Bryce Harper all kind of interchangeably. But that's what Soto does, man. He lets the ball get deep. He drives it to the opposite field. And sometimes he hits balls to left field to distances and portions of the left field bleachers that only power-hitting right-handed bats can find. Amazing to watch another home run for him in a lost effort last night.
Yeah. So he's now, his home run spray chart, 23 to left, 23 to center, 23 to right. Where do you pitch him? I don't have a good answer, and neither does Major League Baseball. So it's interesting. What baseball is, at the end of the day, is a game of consistent adjustments, right? So a pitcher will be, or opposing pitchers are pitching you a certain way. So what are you going to do about it? Are you just going to keep making outs, or are you going to try to fix it, right? So then you start adjusting them, where now everybody's decided, well, we're going to make Juan Soto beat us the other way. I think that's a mistake, by the way. And they keep doing that, and he keeps drilling the ball into the left center field gap or over the left field fence. It's really incredible. So you watch these sort of ebbs and flows of where the ball goes. He'll end up probably, you know, early next year pulling a bunch of homers because people are saying, you know what? I'm tired of watching that ball go over the left center field wall. I'll try to jam him. I'll try to throw cutters inside under his hands or work that way, and he'll just hit balls like he did at Citi Field in New York that go and hit hot dog vendors in the upper reaches of the stands. The guy's incredible.
He's the best. I want to spend some time with you today talking about what the Nats' offseason plan should be. I don't think it's too early to start doing that, Danny.
Not at all.
I understand that there's going to be dismay and frustration and a lot of disappointment about this season, and there should be, to just pretend like it didn't happen or to, you know, say that Starlin Castro got hurt or they didn't have a real spring training, so .. That's not good enough for me. Every team dealt with injuries and every team dealt with this pandemic. Most of them, almost all of them, in fact, way better than the Nationals. However, they won the World Series last year. They still have a really good core, and they're not that far away, I don't think, Danny, from being able to punch a ticket back to the playoffs next year. But they are not going to be able to do that if they just show back up. If they just come back to West Palm Beach with the group that they had this year, then they're going to be a fourth-place team next year over 162 games or maybe even a last-place team. They need to spend money. They need to upgrade it a few important and vital positions, and I'm hoping that they decide that they're going to do that.
This is not a – again, I'm butchering expressions for a segment this morning. Is it baby with the bathwater, one of those kind of things?
What's going on with you and cliches?
I don't know. I'm struggling this morning. I don't know what the problem is. I'll get better. I'll look at the film during the commercial break, and I'll get back to it. This is a good core still. And I know it sounds ridiculous to say that they were 19-31 again and were losing a bunch and haven't looked particularly good and haven't pitched. The Steven Strasburg coming back, 20% of your rotation, one-fifth, has been awful because you're missing him. You do that, you change out the fourth starter, and you go from subpar pitching staff to excellent again, just like that overnight. And over 30 starts, hopefully, knock on wood, for Max and Corbin and Stras, that becomes a completely different team. Just with that happening, right? So two moves right there that are inevitable have this group right back into a place where they could contend. Just like that. That's before you upgrade in right field, potentially. First base, DH, whatever, right? That's a. This is not something where you go, start it over, rebuild, knock it all down. No, no, no. They don't need to do that.
Your drive of the night by Juan Soto was probably your one positive from last night's Nationals game. Drive of the night brought to you by your local Honda dealer. It's time to get to your local Honda dealer for your model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. Thank you, Juan Soto. We're glad you're on our side.
Now the pitch swung on, hit high in the air to deep left field. This one way back. Going, going, and gone. Goodbye. Juan Soto does it again, going the opposite way on a 94-mile-an-hour fastball. Bang! Zoom goes Soto with his 13th home run of the year. A two-run shot on an 0-1 pitch here in the bottom of the ninth inning. And it's now the Phillies 12 and the Nationals 3.
Think about how you felt about Soto coming into the year and then realize he's hitting 53 points higher with his batting average than he ever has before. His on-base percentage, which is leading the league, is 79 points higher than it's been. His slugging percentage, which is leading the league, is over 100 points higher than it's ever been. His OPS closer to 1,200 than 1,100. Just having a monster campaign as he tried his best to help keep the Nationals afloat in a bad season. You're listening to Grant and Danny next. Let's get you your first look at Thursday Night Football. The Jaguars are hosting the Dolphins. How many more games before we see Tua Tagovailoa? And how has Jacksonville played so well? Plus, at the bottom of the hour at 10:30, we'll delve deep into Washington's running back situation. What do we think about Antonio Gibson so far? We heard a lot about him. There was plenty of hype through two games. How do we feel about Gibson and this trio of backs they chose over Adrian Peterson? You are listening to The Fan. Guys, Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevy. Been telling you about them for a while. They do a great job getting you the best deals possible, and that's because their general manager, Paul Smith, knows what he's doing. He's been in the game forever. He's a good buddy of mine. He's a huge D.C. sports fan, by the way. He's sharp when it comes to baseball. He can go deep on the Nats prospects with you. When you get over to Lindsay Chevy, make sure you talk some ball with Paul Smith, but also make sure you ask for one of their great deals. They got over 800 new Chevy Silverados available, heavy and light duty, up to $15,000 off. Camaros, Malibus, Traxes, up to $8,000 off. Equinoxes, Blazers, Traverses, up to $8,000 off. And you can take it from me. They will save you more. Got my last few cars from them. Shop now and save at lindsaychevy.com or Lindsay Chevy in Woodbridge. While you are there, make sure you ask for Paul Smith and make sure you tell him you listen to the show and I sent you. He will take extra good care of you. You know I love it at Lindsay, and you will too. Go find new roads. G&D on this Thursday. Your matchup on Thursday Night Football. NFL Week 3 getting going tonight. 0-2 Dolphins, 1-1 Jags. It feels like everyone's kind of leaning toward Jacksonville. They have played better so far this season. Miami in Week 1 lost 21-11 to the Patriots. Cam Newton literally figuratively running all over them. Then they played really well this past week and could have easily beaten a good Bills team. Josh Allen was splendid, and they beat Miami 31-28. So the Dolphins come in looking for their first win of the year. Meanwhile, for the Jaguars, the story has been how prolific their offense has been and how dynamic their passing game, led by Gardner Minshew, looks. They beat the Colts 27-20 in Week 1. We could start there, where they handled the Colts, seemed like with ease in the second half. And then they lost a three-point game to the Titans by a field goal, a Tennessee team that looks playoff-bound and was in the AFC Championship game last year. And they gave them all they could handle. But, Danny, averaging right around 30 points under Jay Gruden through two games. I've been wondering, how are they doing it? You know, everyone talks about how fun they are to watch when people put the film on. Well, we're going to get to see them play tonight in primetime.
Yeah, the offense is the real deal, man. Again, I will keep banging this drum. Jay Gruden can coordinate offense. They got an undrafted rookie free agent running back, James Robinson, who's pretty good. I mean, he just looks the part. It just always reminds you, you can find these guys, you know, when you start looking under rocks and you go to Illinois State for some reason to find somebody that can tote the rock for you out of the backfield. But Laviska Shenault is a joy to watch. He looked like he got lost on the way from the tight end room, ended up in the receiver room because he's fast enough. He's big. He's physical. He's kind of their gadget guy. He's got like a, I'm trying to think of a good comp for him. Sort of a, I don't know, it's like a, Who's the guy that has played for seven? Cordero Patterson. He's like a rich man's Cordero Patterson at this point for Jacksonville. Chris Thompson out of the backfield. DJ Chark is good. Keelan Cole is good. They got a bunch of weapons, man. Gardner Minshew's back there slinging it, spreading it around. Jay Gruden's just getting guys open. Defensively, they're hot garbage. I think they're terrible on that side of the ball. I'm leaning, if we're going to start talking about bets and things of the night, I'm not going to put any money down on it, but I feel like the over is very much in play. I think both these offenses will be able to move the football.
So the Jags with Gardner Minshew last year were basically a 500 team, and they're off to a 1-1 start this season. He completed 67% of his passes a year ago, and he's up to 75% now. If you look at his career numbers, 27 touchdowns and 8 picks, a 94 rating for him. I'm not really sure if he is a franchise QB. I just haven't watched enough of him to make a detailed analysis on him. But I know this. When I look at stat lines, and I went back and watched because my buddy's a Jags fan, and he had a couple picks this past week, and he's like, look at the picks. They were deflected. So I went back and just looked those up on NFL.com, and they weren't really his fault. So he could easily right now have six touchdowns and no picks on the season. And who knows? If that were the case, maybe they'd be 2-0. But he's playing his way into possibly being their guy. If you are drafting in the top 2, 3, 4, I always say this, it's very different. Because then all of a sudden it almost doesn't matter who you have if your quarterback's not great. You might be able to get a great quarterback. If the Jets are picking one, even if they like Sam Darnold, it would be egregious not to take Trevor Lawrence. If you're picking first, it means you were horrendous. Mm-hmm. And you might like your quarterback, but clearly Trevor Lawrence will do more for your organization than whoever you had if you're picking in the top 2 or 3. But if the Jags can play 6-10 or 7-9 ball and they can get to the bottom of the top 10, then maybe you hang on to Gardner Minshew. You further address your offensive line or with this team. You know, maybe you go add pieces in the back end of your defense because they obviously need a lot of help on that side of the ball. But he is playing like a guy who belongs in this league as a starter.
He's obviously, I mean, listen, nobody sees the sixth or whatever the hell he was, seventh rounder, stepping in and playing good or this effectively for this long. You've seen guys in moments, like, be okay, right? You saw, like, Nick Mullen or one of those dudes, random Jags, step in and have, like, a nice quarter and a half. But we all knew, right? You knew C.J. Beathard wasn't the real deal. But the greater sample for Minshew is kind of telling you, yeah, this guy can do it. If he gets he's kind of got that Andy Dalton sort of thing to him, right? There's nothing necessarily remarkable about any of his talents, right? That's the most athletic, not the biggest, not the fastest, not the strongest arm. But you get beautiful music with a good offensive coordinator, some good things are happening. So, yeah, I mean, you could do a lot worse than have Minshew and a built-up roster with some new salary cap space and a couple hardy draft picks to start building your franchise. You're right.
On the other side of the ball, the Miami Dolphins, quarterbacked by Ryan Fitzpatrick for now. He has more interceptions and touchdowns through a couple of games, although I'll give Fitzpatrick credit. I thought he was really, really good from what I saw against Buffalo, and his line was great. Threw for 328 yards, a couple touchdowns, and didn't throw any interceptions after being picked off 3 times in week 1. But they drafted Tua Tagovailoa in the top 5. The question really has nothing to do with Fitzpatrick or how he's playing, but it's just about, okay, when is it the best time to indoctrinate this kid? Because the 37-year-old journeyman is not their answer, their solution, their future. They know that. So I started to see people speculating and saying, well, why not go after this week if you're 0-3 with, you know, a week and a half to prepare to Tua? And my answer to that is, well, you shouldn't do that because you play Seattle next, and then you play San Francisco, and I know they have a bunch of injuries. But that defense is still good. And then you play Denver and Los Angeles. And then the Rams, who look really good. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to wait until you have an easy game to play him. I think the next time they play a team that is going to be about on par with them is when they play the Jets on November 15th. But that's kind of what I'm circling right now for Tua, honestly, Danny. They play the Jets in back-to-back weeks with a bye week in between. So they go Jets, bye week,
Jets.
What
a weird scheduling quirk, huh?
How crazy is that? Then they play the Bengals before playing the Chiefs and the Patriots at the end of the season. So I would kind of wait till that, but I was reading last night, you know, Tua has not been tackled since he got hurt at Alabama. He's not been tackled. And it makes sense, right? When would he have been?
Right.
But that's still scary. I mean, he does not know how his body's going to respond. There is a mental toll that's going to take on him. So I'm not thrusting him into the fire in week 4 against one of the better teams in the league. Even if Seattle's defense doesn't pick it up this week, I'm just not doing that to him.
So I was going to say, Seattle's defense is not your older brother Seattle's defense, right?
But you're chasing that game the whole way. You're gonna
I think your point stands.
A bunch.
Yeah, Seattle's going to put up a million points, and then it becomes, you know, everybody gets to pin their ears back and try to hit you. So I understand that. There's no totally soft landing spot until you get to back-to-back games against the Jets and then maybe, you know, the Bengals in that third week. So I hear you. But, on the other side of it, this isn't a project quarterback, right? This is his concern is health, not his ability to do it and kind of pick it up. So I don't know. I could see the other side, too, where it's, yeah, this kid is just so good that as soon as we feel comfortable with his health, we're putting him in there because he's the truth and he's our future. So
well,
I don't know.
Part of this for me is about the offseason. And I know the Justin Herbert performance kind of throws now I'm the guy that doesn't know the cliche. Throws water in my face? That doesn't seem like something that
makes sense. There's cold water with the egg on your face.
Right, egg in my face, right. So the Justin Herbert performance goes against this, obviously. And Joe Burrow has looked really good through a couple games, but I just think he's a different animal altogether. I think that guy, you could have plucked him out of LSU on the night of the national championship game and told him to go out on the field with the Bengals the next day, and he would have looked okay somehow. But I do think still that the rule this year, not the exception, but the rule this year is going to be that young quarterbacks look terrible and that they look worse than they would based on the offseason. And there will be a couple of exceptions. And my guess is that Herbert, by the way, who found out 5 seconds before his start and that a team didn't prepare for him at all, he may very well look a lot worse this weekend. You know, he might throw 2-3 picks because now you're devising and disguising coverages to try to get to this kid that you weren't able to if you were the Chiefs because you thought you were facing a veteran in Tyrod Taylor. But you know, we'll see as we get more information coming in. But I don't know. I'm just skeptical of a guy like Tua with such little time on the grass being thrust out there for a bad team. That's a hard thing to do when you just got drafted and you've had no time.
Yeah, just not being hit. You understand why, but that's just weird. It's just weird. And that's the kind of guy that could have used a preseason moment or two. Not because he needs to learn how to play football again, but because he hasn't experienced those things in a year, basically, right? I mean, how far removed is he from actually being on the football field and have people try to tackle him?
Over a calendar year. It's crazy. Grant and Danny on the Fan, Antonio Gibson. We were told so much about him before the start of the season, and we'd never seen him, right? I mean, you guys couldn't watch the preseason. We weren't out at the practice field. It was just a couple of highlights on YouTube from Memphis. What do we think so far, and what do we think of this backfield with Adrian Peterson running pretty well in Detroit? We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. What do we make of the Washington football backfield so far this season? A lot of hype coming into the year on Antonio Gibson, the third-round pick out of Memphis. What have we seen from him? J.D. McKissic came over. He's the third-down back, who's played a little bit more maybe than expected. Hadn't gotten targeted in the passing game like we anticipated, though. And then Peyton Barber went from being used a ton in week one to getting all of one snap in week two. So we want to break down the running back situation. Meanwhile, Adrian Peterson, who was released, is the leading rusher for the Detroit Lions and has been one of the more efficient ball carriers so far in football this season. Let's start with Gibson, though, Danny. If you look at the metrics, Gibson is off to a pretty good start. I look at rushing yards over expected, a new number via Next Gen Stats. And basically what this is they're able to compute based on where you get the ball, where you're running, where everyone on the defensive side of the ball is, contact, other things, how much you should gain on that given play. And RYOE, rushing yards over expected, is basically how many more yards you get than on average a running back would have gotten on that same carry. And on the season to this point, Antonio Gibson is plus 18 in rushing yards over expected.
Okay.
I like this because for a long time it's been hard to quantify. And this is not perfect by any means. None of these metrics are, but it just gives you a little bit more chance.
It's a data point, yeah.
Try to quantify, okay, he got a yard, but what was that play designed for? And sometimes maybe the expected yardage was minus 3 because you got hit in the backfield and you're able to pick up that extra yardage. Meanwhile, Peyton Barber has gone for 17 yards fewer than expected on his carries. Now, in fairness to him, He has seen more eight-man stacked boxes than any other running back in football. He's tied with Tevin Coleman. Those guys see eight or more in the box 44% of the time. And not surprisingly, both he and Tevin Coleman are not running the ball well. Both have the same numbers, 18 rushes for 30 yards, both of them with those stacked boxes. So you got Barber, who's minus 17 in expected yards, Gibson, who's plus 18. McKissick doesn't have enough carries to qualify, so they don't give his numbers. But I'm impressed by Gibson's wiggle. I like the fact that he ranks seventh among running backs right now in terms of picking up more yards than are there. But I will say, if a fan were to say that they're a little bit disappointed just based on the hype coming into the year, I think that might be reasonable. No, he is the 11-yard touchdown I thought was a great run this past week against Arizona, but by and large, don't you think he's just kind of been okay to this point?
100%. And this is what I get so irked by. And this is just me as a fan now. This is the guy that consumes the same things that everybody else consumes and reads the same things everybody else reads and looks forward to these sorts of things. There is no position now with Washington where we don't overpromise and underdeliver. The amount of attention and hype, we just decided that Darius Geis was great. We just decided that. Had one really good game. Outside of that, what was special? He got hurt a bunch. Antonio Gibson, I read a billion words about how great he was and was going to change the world. 4.1 yards per carry. And again, not all that's his fault. Offensive line and this and that. And I understand that. He hasn't topped the 100 yards that on the season. And we've already anointed this guy as the savior. He's been fine. There's nothing wrong with Antonio Gibson. And he didn't do anything wrong here. All he did was try to play football effectively and, you know, make his way for a guy that had like 11 college carries, get converted to running back at the last minute. Has a bright future. I think he's going to be fine. But this happens somehow in the coverage of this team. And I'm sure it happens in other cities and other fan bases. But the amount of – we cannot contain ourselves when it comes to celebrating these guys and putting gold jackets on them before they actually do anything in the NFL. He's got a lot of room to improve, and I think that's because he is so raw. This is so new for him. But I felt all along he's okay. I don't think they have an unbelievable dynamic running back, though. I don't think that guy's on the roster. Maybe Gibson grows into that, but to me this is a perfectly fine running back, and he's not the problem necessarily with our team, but it's also – not quite the hype train that was that was promised.
So a couple of things. Number one, I guess based just on the two-game evaluation, it's hard to argue with a lot of that. I think I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'll just say I really like what I've seen from him. I have a lot of hope for him, and I get where some of the hype came from. We haven't really seen him get into the open field yet to show off his speed entirely, but he had his long run of the year, which was an 18-yarder, where you saw that when he got around the edge and got off left tackle, and next thing you know, he was into the second level and making a guy miss. I think that there's something there. So I am intrigued by him, and I do think he's such a young running back, to your point, in his infancy, because he played so much receiver in college, that I'm excited about his growth, the maturation, how much he can still learn about the position, because there are so many nuances and tendencies and things that he's got to learn. But overall, I thought he would be a little bit more scat-backy than he is. I mean, he can, yep. As Adrian Peterson told us when he called into the show right after he was released, he can thump. I mean, he can run between the tackles. He can do anything you need him to do. He's big, and he's way thicker than a guy as fast as him, as far as his 40 time, should be. So I like him a lot, and I'm really no more – I'm not down on him in any way. I'm waiting for the breakout, so to speak, but I never had delusions of grandeur. One thing I would say, though, to you is when you kind of break all those things down, are we going to give him the same luxuries that we give Dwayne Haskins? You know, when you talk about Dwayne Haskins, we can't just say he played poorly without referencing how terrible everything is around him three times first. And with Antonio Gibson, that's not all that different. And the quarterback and the accuracy, and that's all part of it, right? So if you're talking about catching passes out of the backfield or being looked at on those wheel routes, what have you, running between the crevices in this offensive line, the blocking that you get from the tight end position, like that's got to be part of it too, right? I wonder what would happen if he was a part of an elite offense over these two games. How much different
it would look different. It would look different. And I don't want him benched. I don't want him.
No, I understand,
I'm not saying that he'll never be any good.
It seems like you're a little bit disappointed
because of the hype. I'm disappointed.
Does he get the same luxuries as Haskins?
Of course. Here's where the disappointment comes in. I was promised so many things. He was a wide receiver in college. 3 catches for 5 yards. Averages 1.7 yards per reception. Where is my dynamic thing? Where is Scott Turner's going to find him a way to get the foot? Where is that? I haven't seen any of that. I'd like to see it. That's all I'm saying. It's not
I'm amazed
Gibson's
by
fault.
That, by the way.
I'm
I think that's
by
probably my biggest surprise of this season on either side of the ball is how uninvolved the backs have been in the passing game. And I don't know if that's a Turner thing or a Haskins thing or teams are just taking them away because they read all the press clippings of everyone talking about it for 3 months. I have no idea. But they've been completely uninvolved.
Four catches for 6 yards between the two running backs that are going to be the linchpins of this offense. So I'd like to not hear anything else about anybody being dynamic until something dynamic happens. Gibson, of course, deserves benefit of the doubt. It's two games. This offense overall is wretched. It's going to hamper his production. But we were, again, I don't know how to describe this better. This is nobody's fault specifically. It's not one person. But the everybody's looking for something to latch on to, right? Yep. It's like this, Chase Young's going to set the rookie sack record or whatever it is. And if he doesn't, it's a disappointment. I think it's unfair. I think the expectations for Gibson were unfair as well, right? This is a guy that's learning the position who has shown a couple things. I want him to get 25 touches a game. Well, maybe not that much. He'll wear down. But you see my point. I want everything to go to Gibson. Show me more Gibson. I have no interest in Peyton Barber being on the field other than as the if both those other guys are tired, then you can give Peyton Barber a carry to get 1.5 yards. I want Gibson to get the football. I don't want him benched or anything. But my disappointment is more from the hype train that I was relentless for Gibson, and I would just like everybody to calm down. That's my general feeling about when we start talking about Washington players. Everybody calm down.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. What do you guys think of Antonio Gibson so far? We heard a lot about him before the start of the year. We are two games into this season at this point. 800-636-1067. We'll open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines. J.D. McKissic had a bit of a breakout in game number two. How sustainable was that? How can they use him more effectively? Maybe we can ask the same question about Gibson moving forward. We'll get to that next right here on G&D. The AAA Always On Call listener lines are open. 800-636-1067. What do you make of Washington's running game and running backs so far? They made a controversial decision. I supported it and endorsed it. Danny did as well. To release Adrian Peterson right before cutdown day. And Peterson has gone on so far in Detroit through 2 weeks. 21 carries and over 130 yards, averaging over 6 yards per carry. And he's outperformed any of Washington's backs. I don't know if it's apples to apples with, you know, two different teams and lines and operations and game plans. But you've got Antonio Gibson averaging 4.1 a carry, J.D. McKissic 4.6, and Peyton Barber at 1.7. So I don't look a lot at those yards per carry for this reason, and I'll say the same about McKissic in a second. Barber comes in on a and-one situation and gets one and goes back to the sideline. That's a huge win, right? He gets high fives from everyone. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. It was 11-on-11 pushing match. He gets a little second-effort nudge and gets his first down. So he batted 1,000 in his performance, and yet the line says 1 yard per carry. And there were plenty of carries like that in week one as well. Similarly, Danny, I think a lot of people went crazy about McKissic in week two. And I loved the performance. Don't get me wrong. It was exciting to watch. He was showing burst and wiggle in the open field. He looked like a guy that has a little jolt, which I dig. But he mostly, the antithesis of the Barber scenario, he's running out of the gun against dime packages on passing downs. So it's a lot of, you know, give him this draw and pick up five before anybody touches you and maybe get 7 or 8. You know, that's what we've seen from J.D. McKissic. I'd be curious to see if you're lining up in those same scenarios where they're expecting run, what that looks like. So I think it's
Chris
a little
Thompson
bit misleading.
Yardage, right?
Exactly. But it's misleading how good he's been, maybe a little bit misleading how good, bad Barber's been. But bottom line is Gibson and McKissic are your better running backs than Peyton Barber. We knew that coming in. My question is this. How do they throw those guys the ball more? Now, when I watch, they go out for passes a lot. They're not targeted, but they're running routes. They're running wheels. They're taking sometimes linebackers and defensive ends with them. There's just got to be a way. I see it too much watching every other game, getting running backs involved. What is not working here?
I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know scheme or design, but I know it needs to be better. I know that this was the skill set. This is why I was excited, right? With all due respect to Adrian Peterson, a Hall of Famer, the game has changed. Adrian Peterson comes off the field when it's time to throw. There are two guys that are way more dynamic in that regard for Detroit, and they know it. So they've got DeAndre Swift and Kerryon Johnson, and they'll pick up someone off their practice squad to do it instead of Peterson. His time is all but passed in this league. It's about how can you catch the football out of the backfield. I don't care about between the tackles running. It's like the seventh or eighth thing that I want out of my running back. Can you pass pro? Can you catch the ball? Are you a matchup nightmare? Can you run those arrow routes? Can you pick up third and four out in space? I care about that. And I don't know how you get more involved. I don't know that, but that was the whole point of why we were enticed by Antonio Gibson. He was a receiver at Memphis until the last minute. That was supposed to be the thing. He was supposed to be the receiver that's kind of converted the running back, right? A rich man's Ty Montgomery. Where is it? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know if it's a Scott Turner thing. I don't know if it's a Haskins thing, a Gibson thing, or you tip your cap to defensive coordinators. But that, to me, is my biggest what the hell is going on with this Washington offense.
9 targets, 4 catches for those two guys combined so far. Let's go to Rod in Landover who wants to hop in. You can call us at 800-636-1067. Hey, buddy, thank you for the call.
Hey, no problem. What's up, fella?
Hey, buddy.
How are you, man?
All right. Okay, the crazy thing about this is, you know, what seems to be normal for other teams always just seems to be not normal for the Redskins, well, for the Washington football team.
That's so true.
I don't understand. I don't care who the players are, who the coaches are. It always tends to look the same. But I'm going to say this, though. I mean, the Gibson thing, I'm not understanding that because, you know, I've watched, you know, highlights of him in college. And to me, he almost looked better at a receiver as he did a running back. So I'm saying to myself, I mean, what's so hard? Why is it so hard for them to flank him out as a receiver and throw him the ball? You know, I just don't understand. I don't know. I mean, I know the Redskins go 3 and out a lot. So because they go 3 and out a lot,
you don't have any options to choose from.
Yeah, you joke, but that could be part of it.
Yes, it is.
That could be part of it. You might not be able to get that deep into your playbook. Thank you for the call. It's a good one, and there were some funny zings in there. But you might have a lot of plays you never get to, ideas you never get to because you can't sustain offense if you're Scott Turner. That's a real thing. But his question, I don't know if it was rhetorical or not, but I think it was brilliant. We keep talking about, like, oh, why aren't you throwing the ball to the running backs out of the backfield? Why aren't they splitting that guy out in the slot and targeting him on a slant? I mean, just get him the football. It's not that hard. 1st and 10, open the game. He's in the backfield, traditionally. You've now demanded with 2 running backs, you know, a couple of tight ends, whatever you want to do, but you get linebackers instead of DBs on the field, and now you split Gibson out into the slot, and he gets one-on-one and gets to run a slant. Why not? That's one of the few throws so far that Haskins has made time and time and time again beautifully. I am baffled by the lack of involvement by those guys.
It's got to be a priority too, Grant. It's got to be one of those things where, I mean, I can't remember who, maybe it was Sean McVay at some point that we got to talk to, would say, and look, I'm looking down at my play sheet, and like next thing you know, he's got to find a way to get blank involved. Like it's been too long since I've thrown the football to this person or gotten the football there, and you come up with designs and just sort of in that, like a point guard, right, where my best shooter hasn't shot in a while. I got to make sure I get him involved in this next offensive trip down the court, et cetera. You got to have that feel. Gibson's probably their second best option right now in offense behind Terry McLaurin. So handing him the football, that's adorable. That's precious. No, thank you. Find a way to get him the ball in space. That, to me, is what Scott Turner is paid to do right now.
4 catches for 6 yards for those two guys. 3 catches, 5 yards for Gibson. 1 catch, 1 yard for J.D. McKissic. I know it's a small sample, but even through 2 games, that's just
not a good sample.
Staggering. I mean, it punches you right in the stomach. Chris Russell, he'll punch you in the stomach if you let him. He joins us next on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline as we preview the upcoming matchup with the Cleveland Browns. In the 11 o'clock hour, what should the Nats' offseason plan be? And there is a new frontrunner for the MVP race.
Thank you. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.